Good afternoon and welcome to The Lunchroom live on Radio Caribbean International. And I'm your host, Calix George Jr. And it's Thursday, the 24th of October, day number 297 of the year 2019. We're on to show number 162. And today in The Lunchroom, we'll be speaking about, are we measuring our investment decisions enough? And of course, we'll be looking at the topical DSH project as a case in point. And why a PPP for cruise ports, and even possibly the OKEU hospital, but not a PPP for the Hewanora International Airport. And so we'll be discussing that issue. And we'll take in a bit of UK news as well. The 39 individuals found, Chinese individuals found in a container in Essex, as well as a promise update on the results of Canada's general elections. Of course, at The Lunchroom, we aim to be the most informative hour of talk radio you can find. You can help us set that menu with your calls, questions, and comments. You can call in to 452-3046. That's 452-3046, as well as message or call in via WhatsApp platform. 724-0008 is the number. That is 724-0008. And if you'd like to follow us online, you can do so via our website, rcisaintlucia.com. And also, we are streaming live on Facebook. Just search for the official page of Radio Caribbean International. And please like and share that as well with your friends. As usual, our shout out to our De La Cuisine participants, Hardest Hard Restaurant and Bar, Eugenie's Delight, KFC, Bozen's, as well as Massey Stores, New Dock Road. And for October the 24th, we have quite a number of birthday wishes. First, happy birthday to the former president of the CSA, Civil Service Association, and regular contributor to The Lunchroom, Mr. Kingsley St. Hill, known to many as Inch. And happy birthday as well to Mr. Yannick Theodore, to Mr. Michael Jacques, to Miss Sophia Frederick, Miss Skylar Lewis, Miss Hersia Andrew, Mr. Kendall Henry, Miss Sansha Isidore, Miss Crescentia Ishmael, Miss Darcel Beausoleil, and Mr. Sherman Sylvester. We wish you all the very best on your very special day. And of course, if you'd like to send birthday greetings, you can do so via The Lunchroom. You can just email us at lunchroom@rcisaintlucia.com. And today would have also been the birthday of St. Lucia's best-known artist, the man behind the St. Lucia flag, Sir Dunstan Santoma. And for those of you who also love Drake, he is 33 today. And October the 24th is also recognized as International Day of Diplomats. So I'd like to send best wishes to all diplomats and individuals who've been posted in foreign missions here in St. Lucia, the UK, French, Spanish, Mexican, Taiwanese, Venezuelan, Brazilian embassies. All the best to you, and of course to St. Lucia missions around the world, in London, in Brussels, Rabat, in Havana, New York, Toronto, Washington, D.C., Miami, and Taipei. We wish you all the very best serving your country overseas. And a few notable events for October the 24th. In 1648, the Treaty of Westphalia ends the 30 Years' War in the Holy Roman Empire, and Switzerland is finally recognized as a state. And in 1929, the stock market Dow Jones in the United States crashed. That was the beginning. It was called Black Thursday, and that was a 12.8% dip in that market. And in 1962, Soviet ships approached but stopped short of the U.S. blockade of Cuba and during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And in 2008, Bloody Friday saw many of the world's stock exchanges experience the world's decline, the worst declines in their history, with drops about 10% in most of the indices. And now we move on to our dish of the day. The Daily Dish is brought to you the kind compliments of Tiles Plus and SGD Engineering, agents for Inco Tools in St. Lucia.
We have tiles for inside and outside. Bathroom, kitchen with the best price. We range from colors to size. So anytime you want tile, come down and get tile. Everybody welcome to Tiles Plus. Come get your tiles with the low cost. Tiles with the style like a Christmas. All kind of tiles, cause we are the boss. Everybody welcome to Tiles Plus. Come get your tiles with the low cost. Tiles with the style like a crisscross. All kind of tiles, cause we are the boss.
We are located Lance Road in Castries, Bossejou, Grosdelay, and Clark Street in VA4. Telephone number 453-7939. That's telephone number 453-7939. Tennis Plus.
A poor workman always blames his tool. Well, Inco Tools has come to solve this problem. Located in the Evergreen Plaza right next to Massey Stores in Rodney Heights, we give you high-quality, durable tools at unbeatable prices. We stock tools for carpentry, gardening, AC and electrical technicians. We have hand tools, power tools, air tools. We even have household tools for the ladies. We also stock generators, water pumps, air compressors, AC units, refrigeration parts, refrigerants, and solar water heaters. Call us at 452-5185 for more information and ask about our 3-month warranty on all tools. Inco Tools, make the world in your hands.
Serving now, the Daily Dish.
And welcome back to the lunchroom, and we hope that everybody's having a pleasant Thursday. Of course, it is in the lead up to Journée Créole, and we can see people already getting into the groove of things, discussing where they are going to be having their lunch and their breakfast, their dite and everything come for tomorrow and leading into the entire weekend. So we wish everybody the very best of festivities, and we do hope that everybody has a very good time. Now, of course, we heard yesterday the whole issue of the DSH racetrack, and we saw the Prime Minister down at Vieux-Fort, and he was part of a delegation speaking about the inaugural race day event. It has been dubbed the China Horse Club Equine and Cultural Festival 2019. That is going to be held in St. Lucia at Beausejour at the new Royal St. Lucia Turf Club. And of course, we have heard about DSH for quite some time now. It was first proposed to the Kenny Anthony administration, which had been looking for a potential investor to develop a horse racetrack project. However, the terms of that agreement seem not to have been able to have been settled because of difficulty in accepting what was perhaps an extensive wish list by the developer, Mr. Teo Aking. Now, Mr. Teo Aking, Malaysian-born of Chinese ethnicity, is an architect. I would say a very well-respected architect, and has been involved in a number of projects, inclusive the Maidan Racecourse in Dubai. And of course, you know, Dubai has a tradition of quite a bit of wealth to splash around at major massive projects such as this. And he was also involved in a redesign work for the second of the Palm Dumera Islands, I believe it was called, over in Dubai. That one never actually came to full fruition, still an incomplete project. So, of course, the hope from Mr. Teo through this project is that it would have been funded through St. Lucia's CIP project, Citizenship by Investment. And when the deal was announced, which was done very shortly after the Alan Chastney administration took power, back in July of 2016, it was announced as a U.S. $2.7 billion project. And, of course, the impression was that money would be flowing in to support this project and a number of different components. We heard of a sandy beach component to it, where there would be extensive hotel development at Sandy Beach. We also heard of another side component, where there would also be a cruise port, and a number of other hotels would be part of it, a new commercial area. The whole works are far greater than what was originally perhaps envisaged for this project down in Vieux-Fort. It seems, however, that this project has been tapered down quite a bit, because if we are to believe what we've been told by the Director of Implementation, Nancy Charles, that so far, U.S. $30 million has been spent on the project. And she's referring to, of course, the racetrack, which is the part of the project which has thus far been furthest along. Remember the details of that, of course, that land was going to be leased to the developer for 99 years at $1 an acre. But even if we are to use just the figures that have been provided by the government, 30 million, if we actually work that out, 30 divided by 2,700 or 2.7 billion, you would actually end up with about a completion rate of about 1.1%. So that's where we are at right now in terms of DSH. And we're seeing, I suppose, what you can call a soft opening of a project, because clearly there isn't the grandstand and a lot of the other trappings that were proposed. The adjoining hotel and all those other things are not part of this this phase of the project. I think we were promised somewhere in the region of about 600 horses with races every single day. It does appear, based on the Royal St. Lucia Turf Club's website, that they're proposing somewhere in the region of 13 race days in 2020. So that is, I think, about a race every month is what they're looking at, or race day every month, with the inclusion of two race days in the month of May, because I think they also have May the 1st as an included race day. But the first event is slated for December the 13th, and that's supposed to be the highlight, the marquee event. And of course, we were told that 40 horses have been brought in for this event. And if you would like to purchase a horse, I understand the price is somewhere in the region of about $20,000 for that horse investment. I've also been told that the horses look very, very impressive as compared to some of the local horses, as the case may be. But be that as it may, let's take in the Prime Minister who spoke yesterday. And he was giving us a sense of what seems to be a change in direction for a number of aspects of the DSH project. Because here he's actually speaking about the Sandy Beach development now being done by Invest St. Lucia.
Estimated that we will be adding at least 100,000 new passengers into the Viewfoot area. And that then now falls in very much in line with the project that we're doing at Sandy Beach, in which we are building 100 acres of property, dividing it up and putting all the infrastructure in and making those lots available for both local solutions and also regional people, that we have our own beach facility. And so the way that the project is being designed is the concrete road will become the boardwalk. So there will be no development on the beach side. The only development will really be the washroom facilities, some food outlets, lifeguard stations, as well as recreational facilities for the public. And then we'll have now the hotels. And why is that necessary? Because the home porting brings what we call pre- and post-passengers. Passengers who will come in a couple of days early, passengers who will come in a couple of days later. We want them to be able to stay and enjoy the facilities. On December 13th, I know that Teo is bringing in some pretty big investors that we've been courting for the last year or so. And their chairpersons are coming here, and hopefully they'll be making some pretty significant announcements of some additional investments that will be taking place right here in the DSH place. So the work of the horse racing track of the Royal St. Lucia Turf Club as being the star attraction, as the persons of bringing attention to St. Lucia, being the magnet to get new investments into our destination that we could not have done otherwise.
Right, and that was the Prime Minister speaking more broadly about, I suppose, the vision or the economic strategy for Viewfoot. Use the term 100,000 new passengers into the Viewfoot area. I'm not exactly too sure what he means by that, if he's referring to the expected increase in passenger arrivals into the Huonora International Airport. That is not quite clear. But of course, he does speak about the Sandy Beach project, which was originally part of that DSH proposal. And it seems to have been removed from the DSH proposal. And it's now being championed by Invest St. Lucia directly. It seems as if the funding for that is supposed to come directly from Invest St. Lucia. We did have representatives of Invest St. Lucia back in August, and they were speaking about that investment. Now, the plan there, of course, is essentially a subdivision that they would put in the infrastructure in terms of roads and electricity, water, you know, things that you would require, all the amenities you require for a development, and with the hope that individuals would be able to take up the opportunity, buy the lots, and then make the investments. So that is what is now on train for Sandy Beach. As he indicated, the proposal is the realignment of the road, another realignment, and to shift the road away from the water's edge towards the southern fence of the Huonoa International Airport, that the aerodrome. So that's the situation at least at that end. But what is also very interesting is, of course, a recent announcement coming out of the recent FCCA meeting, I believe, held in Puerto Rico. And that is that the government and Carnival, as well as Royal Caribbean, have again signed an MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding. And that MOU has to do with the cruise ports facilities in St. Lucia. Now, of course, the Prime Minister has been speaking about this Vieux-Fort cruise port. In some respects, nothing new, because we have actually seen in the past, like, for instance, when there's work being done on the port in Castries, the cruise port, I do remember there was a time when a number of cruise ships actually visited the town of Vieux-Fort. At that time, investments were made, like improving the road to Mola Chic and whatnot, so as to be attractions. So certainly a nice idea in terms of having another cruise port, maybe, although we are, of course, a very small island. And when you look at the Caribbean today, you have somewhere in the region of about 60 ports of call, stretching from the west side, western part of the Caribbean, from Cozumel and Cancun and Belize, Roatan, those ports, going right down into the southern side, of course, with Aruba, the ABC Islands, and, of course, coming up with the southern Caribbean or the eastern Caribbean, where we are located. What has happened over the years, of course, is that quite a bit of traffic has been growing in the western Caribbean. Of course, the western Caribbean is closer to some of these major ports, home ports of Port of Miami, Port of Everglades, as well as ports like in Texas, in Houston. Those are some of the major source markets for the cruise operators like Carnival and Royal Caribbean. But he speaks about the whole concept of home porting. As it is right now, it's very unlikely, in my opinion, that Carnival and RCL are going to be looking into home porting on this side of the Caribbean, because they pretty much have a fairly good business model working through Miami and Fort Lauderdale, as well as some of the other Gulf ports. Now, who operates out of the Eastern Caribbean is actually P&O, Pacific and Orient, and that is largely, well, I mean, share ownership changes over time, but it's traditionally a European operator, cruise operator. And they are actually have been doing home porting out of Barbados in particular. But for quite some time, actually, I think since back in 2014, they have actually been doing some level of home porting out of St. Lucia. So it would be very interesting to see, with this new proposal that we are now hearing about, an MOU between the government of St. Lucia and Carnival, to now get into what is effectively a PPP, a public-private partnership, for the cruise ports, not just a new cruise port in Vieux-Fort, but also a port in the existing cruise port in Castries. And that is very, very interesting, because clearly it will have implications with SLASPA, the St. Lucia Air and Sea Ports Authority. If you have a chance to ever look at SLASPA's operations, quite a fair bit of their revenue actually comes out of port operations, seaport operations, far more, in fact, than what they get out of airport operations. That very well may be skewed towards the cargo operations as well, but they certainly do benefit from what they get out of the cruise sector as well. Now, we also know that the cruise sector is somewhat notorious in terms of their desire to get the lowest possible rates for taxes and what have you. There was an attempt some time back, a number of years ago, where there was a hope that we could actually increase the current payment per passenger. I think right now the head tax is somewhere in the region of $5, and the hope was that we could actually increase it to 10. That did not materialize because, again, of threats by the cruise lines that they would pull out. And that's the reality is, it's a very competitive market, even within the Caribbean. And we certainly should not fool ourselves, because in the Southern Caribbean, as where we are located, we are sort of at the lower ranks of the totem pole. And as I indicated, it's very easy for them to do business out of the existing ports. So the ports which are closest to the home ports are the ones which tend to have the biggest impact, the biggest returns for the cruise operators. So that's why they love the Western Caribbean. They love the Bahamas. In fact, there's already been an agreement which was signed back in September for two new cruise ports in the Bahamas. I think one on San Salvador Island. If you know your history, that's supposed to be the island where Christopher Columbus landed in 1492. And so clearly, there is a great emphasis on that part of the Caribbean. So the Cayman Islands, the Bahamas, even Cuba to a certain extent. Haiti has Labadee. We've also seen in Jamaica, where they have about three dedicated cruise ports in Montego Bay, in Falmouth, as well as in Ocho Rios. They're doing, of course, very good business because of proximity to the U.S. They can provide shorter cruise vacations, three-day and four-day cruise vacations. So the ability to roll over becomes much better. The minute you start heading down further and further away from that, I mean, and they also use San Juan, Puerto Rico, as a cruise, as an area to actually go to get cruises for home ports. It tends to be longer cruises, and the overall ability to spend is also a big challenge. So what you tend to find is that cruise passengers, they tend to spend money fairly early, or they also spend money at very well-known destinations where they know the shopping is very good. So that's why places like St. Martin, if you look at the average spend in St. Lucia, I think back in 2015, the figure was about $80 US. Whereas in St. Martin, they're spending closer to about $200 US per passenger. So we have to think about these things. And I'm saying so also in the context that with P&O, I think if you speak to a number of people at the stores in Point Serafin, they will tell you, in fact, that P&O passengers, the European passengers, the UK passengers, actually tend to spend more. And that could very well be because they're actually starting off out of Barbados, so they're from you're less numbers down the peg in terms of visitation that you're actually at. You're a second destination or a third destination, not necessarily a sixth or seventh destination, as we may very often be. So there is great benefit in terms of P&O and that market, even though the majority of cruise passengers are in fact coming out of the United States of America. There's no doubt about that. But the question is, what is their spend and what is their likelihood to actually make a big economic impact? Even with Carnival, you will hear quite often a number of people complaining about Carnival, persons who travel on Carnival. They tend to be coming out of Puerto Rico or some of those other areas, those market segments, and they tend not to spend as much. So definitely, it has to be thought of within that context too. But coming back to the bigger picture of this whole issue of a PPP, a public-private partnership for ports. Again, we're hearing about it. We're hearing about an MOU, but we have not really seen what the details are as to what is going to be on offer. We have been told about a joint venture, but we're not hearing about what the sharing is going to be in terms of revenues, who is going to be responsible for what. Because as it is right now in the Port of Castries, you have two major players. You have Invest St. Lucia, which owns the assets at Point Serafin. So they own the shopping center at Point Serafin, even though Slasper is the one operating the port there. So they have a major interest. as well as SLASPA, which runs La Place Carénage on the other side of the harbor. So clearly, they're going to have to be looking at how that is going to be impacted in terms of the overall revenue sharing situation for SLASPA. A lot of these details have to be worked out. We're not sure as to where they are at, but certainly it is not the first time that we have seen a proposal of this nature. Back in 2008, there was an MOU, I believe, signed with Royal Caribbean Cruise for the La Place Carénage side of the cruise port. In other words, the redevelopment of the Northern Wharf, what is sometimes called the Queen Elizabeth II Wharf, the Jeremy Street side of the port. And the idea there was to redevelop that area, make it a lot more attractive. Of course, people like Ras Ipa would remember this very well, because part of that proposal is the removal of the Vendors Arcade. And that, of course, we saw did not go as far as we would have liked, perhaps, because of issues related to sewage in the port of Castries. And from my understanding, Royal Caribbean had concerns and was not willing to make an investment until we could deal with treatment of the sewage coming into the Castries harbor. As we know right now, sewage is not being treated. It is simply just being pumped out into the water. So that had to be resolved. There was, in fact, a study done by with the assistance of the French Agency for International Development. And the idea was to actually establish a sewage treatment plant for the city of Castries, the surrounding area. I believe the issue then became, where do you site it? And one of the locations that was being considered was to the southern side of the runway, of the George Charles runway, in the region of the old SLBGA hangar and going down past the Prime Minister's official residence. And that's area down there where the police have their marine operations. I believe there was some objection to that. And so as of now, we still have not seen any movement in terms of dealing with the sewage problem for Castries. Of course, it is of concern to anybody coming into the harbor. If you're on the water and you look at issues of effluent and smell, all of these things have to be dealt with. So it will be very interesting to see how that pans out. And we would like to believe that we'd be able to get a lot more transparency when it comes to this, that MOU. Will it be made available? I really do hope that it can be, so that people can understand exactly what is on the cards when we are speaking about giving or giving up the management and operations of the Port of Castries to Carnival and RCL. Of course, because the other big issue is, what is the timing? Then you can easily get into a situation where the real carrot for them is the operations out of Castries. So we're going to have to see very clearly what is on the table with respect to this deal. And that's our dish of the day.
This has been The Daily Dish.
We have tiles for inside and outside. Bathroom, kitchen with the best price. We range from colors to size. So anytime you want tile, come down and get tile. Everybody welcome to Tiles Plus. Come get your tiles with the low cost. Tiles with the style like a Christmas. All kind of tiles, cars, we are the boss. Everybody welcome to Tiles Plus. Come get your tiles with the low cost. Tiles with the style like a crisscross. All kind of tiles, cars, we are the boss. We are located Lance Road in Castries, Bossy Jugros Delay, and Clark Street in GFO. Telephone number 453-7939. That's telephone number 453-7939. Tiles Plus.
A poor workman always blames his tool. Well, Inco Tools has come to solve this problem. Located in the Evergreen Plaza right next to Massey Stores in Rodney Heights, we give you high-quality, durable tools at unbeatable prices. We stock tools for carpentry, gardening, AC and electrical technicians. We have hand tools, power tools, air tools. We even have household tools for the ladies. We also stock generators, water pumps, air compressors, AC units, refrigeration parts, refrigerants, and solar water heaters. Call us at 452-5185 for more information. information and ask about our 3-month warranty on all tools. Inco Tools. Make the world in your hands.
And welcome back to the lunchroom. Thanks for sticking with us. And of course, if you'd like to call in to add to the mix, you can do so to tell us what's on your plate. Our number is 452-3046. This is 452-3046. As well as our WhatsApp number is 724-0008. So please feel free to add to the conversation here at the lunchroom. Now, we were speaking about, of course, very extensively about the cost implications to the state regarding the Desert Star Holdings Pearl of the Caribbean project. Because quite often, when we think about FDI, we think about foreign direct investment, we don't quite think that the state itself has to put out any funding and any resources of its own. The expectation is the developer is the one who is going to come in and front the bill and is going to make things happen. The developer is going to come in, they're going to buy the land, they're going to purchase it outright. They may also have to do certain contributions towards improving the infrastructure to allow for this development to go forward, whether it might be in the way of roads or road improvement or water improvement. So when the state has to actually give up quite a bit or invest quite a bit into a project, it then begs the question as to whether, in fact, it's good value for money. Of course, the expectation as well is that we may have to forego things like tax revenue. We may give up things, make concessions. And, of course, there are laws for that. There's a tourism stimulus law. There are a number of incentives laws that deal with that type of issue. But in the case of DSH, there has been quite a bit of direct as well as indirect money that the state has had to spend to make the development happen. And we'll discuss that in a little bit just after we take this first call. Good afternoon and welcome to the lunchroom. What's on your plate today?
Bon après-midi, monsieur.
Bon après-midi. How are you?
I'm good. I want to weigh in on that discussion here this afternoon. Mwela.
Go ahead.
Yeah, in terms of, I have a few issues with this DSH deal or scheme, so to speak. In terms of land, the land itself is the only real estate. Mm-hmm. And we need to establish that. Money is paper that we've created and we give it value. We can devalue and give it value at will. Depends on who is in the driving seat. He who has the gold makes the rules. So he who controls the economy makes the rules. But the only real estate is the land. Everything comes from the land. We ourselves comes from the land. So when you take communal land, without, and I'm stressing communal lands, the land belongs to the people.
Yeah.
And the only land that is made has already been made. God ain't making more land anymore. So that's a fixed asset in a sense. So you have to be careful how you drop that kind of fixed asset. The people's asset, not yours. It's not your private asset. And to let it go at $1 for whatever 99 years and passports again without consultation or due consultation with the people, it's already an indictment as far as I'm concerned. So that alone is for me a reason not to support that project. In addition, people usually argue that Sir John Compton era, if people had to listen to him or listen to them, there would be no Grosile, there would be no Dam, there would be no some of the other products. That is partly true, but there were people around Sir John Compton. These ideas came from them. For example, the Dam was a Cuckoo Child's brainchild.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that.
That was Cuckoo Child's brainchild, the forest to supply water. And if he had listened to Cuckoo Child's, we would have more than one water supply, and there would be one at Monnier.
I know that was an identified area.
Area, but he didn't listen to. So there are many things that were proposed. He took some and he did not take some. And not all the things that he did were environmentally sound. That was a different era.
Yeah.
Where we dump sewer anywhere. You know, and we did anything we wanted of the environment. This is a different time. One time we could have used plastic all over the place. Now we see the dangers of plastic. And so we are rethinking our use of practice. So if the Honorable John Compton was alive, he would be opposing in that project the same way, because we are more enlightened in this era as to how we develop and how we use our communal lands.
Right.
And he made a lot of mistakes. A lot of coral was destroyed, and we have not even quantified the cost of the destruction of the factor that in the equation, the cost of the destruction of the environment in the so-called development equation. So this is, we have not measured that. Not all that counts can be counted, and not all that can be counted counts. And that principle must stand when we're looking at development. I have another point here in terms of the Grozile development. People want to hail that as a success. Be careful what we ask for, because there are hurricanes, and the damage that could be caused there, that can be caused, we have to be careful. Second on that, thirdly and finally, on the point of the DCH development, we have not developed a land use plan in this dispensation of how to develop. We are developing ad hocly. Two bon ma. Nepot manye, only devinianu, amun banu alak, nukanik modi laklas. I say lak yubanu. And we are making, as it were, the Prime Minister and his cabinet, and those are wrong names in advising him, they are making love to dead business ideas. The business ideas about the horse racing thing, that's a dead business idea. Dolphin park, these are dead business ideas. Get progressive, get innovative, get creative, get imaginative, and come with good business ideas. And first and foremost, we must learn to feed ourselves. We cannot take our best agricultural lands, give it away, literally giving it away for something that does not redound to our benefit. Let us ponder on these things. This is serious business. And the future generation, the people in Viewfort, and the surrounding areas, Mikud, Labri, etc., when the population continue to expand and grow in the next 30, 40, 50 years, where will we get that land back to satisfy our social, economic, and other needs? So, ladies and gentlemen, Mamai Setlisi, Moi Kriol Sa, Moi June Kriol, Aritash Kriol, nous préposition manière nous ca bail mon tenu c'est lui qui ni valait là où la jeté ou pas ca joindre ni vie en nous préposition nous ca payer pour ça en nous dit monsieur chasse de venir parler avec nous il pas parler avec nous il ca fait ça il veut ça pas bon pour un pays démocratie pas ca commencer en ballot box là le vote et ben il pas ca fini un ballot box là à pour vote. On est pour qu'à consulter toutes les avec peuple là pour nous faire une décision ensemble. Sur nos propres conscients, bon Dieu béni, qui paye nous. Cette liste est belle.
Indeed. Merci à chaque caller. Thank you very much, caller. Very interesting points that you were making, especially in terms of the issue of land and land use. Certainly very, very critical. And it seems there is a plan. But as to whether there was any consultation for that plan as to how it was supposed to fit in, it doesn't seem as if there was any at all. And rightfully so, you've pointed out that it need not have been used for that purpose. If, let's say you didn't want to use it as a livestock farm, you could have used the land for other things. You could have used it for medical marijuana. What would have been the value, the economic impact of that? So I'm not sure what the total economic impact is for this race course, but really and truly, we should have been able to see what is the analysis, what are the figures, because clearly we should have then been able to make a reasonable decision as to whether, in fact, this is even the best location for a race course. And when you look at where race courses generally are located, they're not on your prime land. Most times they're not on your prime land. They tend to be on marginal lands, away from centers. So, and this is very, very, very valuable land. It's, some of St. Lucia does not have very much flat land, does not have very much arable land. Only about 6% of our island is considered arable. And, certainly it's a big, 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 task when you actually consider giving away that amount of land. Now, we were just looking about the issue of how we measure those things, and we indicated that if you look at the value of the land, based on what we've been told, it works out to be about $48.6 million, and that's just the land for the racetrack, about the 200 acres which is dedicated for the racetrack, which has been leased. Then we have to think about the cost of acquisition of new land at Miku for the purpose of reestablishing the livestock farm. And my understanding is that that is somewhere in the region of $12 million. Then we have to speak about the cost of putting in the infrastructure for that new livestock farm. I'm not sure, but let's just say $5 million for that. I think it would be a very conservative estimate. The loss of the Bosseju meat processing facility in and of itself, that was built at a cost of $21 million. The DSH bypass road, that was built at a cost of $13 million. When you look at also the lost revenue in terms of the livestock enhancement program, which was also being funded via a grant from the South-South Cooperation project, and that was about $5 million, which was supposed to have been going into supporting the livestock sector for development. And remember, we're doing all of this on the backdrop of a country that continues to spend more and more money on food imports. I think our food import bill last year was in the region of 370 million EC dollars. That's at CIF prices. We have a call coming. Let's take this call very quickly. Good afternoon and welcome to the lunchroom. What's on your plate today?
Good afternoon, Alex. And how are you?
Not bad, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I just want to, you know, just talk a little bit about, I know there are quite a few radio talk shows on the airwaves.
That's right.
And for quite some time now, I mean, I used to call them a lot more often, and then I have ceased or do it less regularly because I don't think that anybody of relevance or of influence is listening and taking action on all the good subjects that are being discussed on the airwaves. Like now, whether because, I mean, I heard a gentleman talking previously, and, I mean, he makes a lot of sense. But then where is all that good talk? Where is it falling? Is it falling on fertile ground? Is anybody listening and who can act upon them? Because I think if we're just talking and talking and talking and then nobody's listening, the people who have the power to act upon those things have, what do you call it, town hall meetings and discussing those things, and we know that we can get somewhere because someone is listening. I mean, a lot of discussion is going on. Yes, it's good, but then the persons, the people who can act upon them, I don't hear them. I don't say, well, I hear you, and then, you know, this is what we're doing. And then there's no reporting about, you know, the achievements and the successes and, addressing those issues. I don't know what you want to say on that.
No, you're very correct, caller, and we also have an issue of the creation of silos as well. So we find that certain people don't want to go on certain programs, or they shy away from certain issues. You find that going on. I think it is very critical as a country that we have some form of or means by which these things can be brought forward. But it really depends on people and the populace listening to voice their opinion, to let people know that, in fact, they are not satisfied, or they would like to see something happen a certain way, or they are thankful about something, whatever your opinion may be. And that's exactly what the last caller made the point is on. it does not end at the ballot box. You have a role in a democracy to ensure that the leaders, the people who you have put there to represent you, are in fact representing your best interest.
But then all of that good stuff seems to be falling on deaf ears. And that's the point. And I mean, there are lots and lots of very good topics and subjects, you know, on the airwaves. And right now we have a culture that has been developed where, you know, one person is doing whatever they want, and they're doing it in our name and for us without consulting with us. And that is very dangerous. And some people, you know, just take it to mean that, look, I put him in there to represent me, and then he knows what's best for me. If you don't come and talk to me and find out what is best for me, what is good for me, discuss that with me. How do you know? How do you measure that, you know, what you are giving to me is what I need or what I want? You know, you're only giving me what you think that I want. And, you know, most of the time, that's not what I want.
No, you're very correct, caller. I mean, you can't see it any better. And I think it's a big issue in our society. Even though we're such a small society, it seems that we're just not talking enough to each other sometimes. We're not speaking and consulting sufficiently about the right things, about what's going on. And we believe sometimes we understand what people want. It's a very, very difficult state to be in. I don't know how much comfort I can give you, though, because the only thing that we can do really is to let our positions be known. And I know we have a very passive-aggressive populace. A lot of people, they don't want to say anything. They don't want to offend anybody. They like to keep things as they are. And so just mind their own business. Wow. It's not going to affect me. I'm going to continue living my life, and it's perfectly fine.
I strongly believe that the biggest contributor of this type of culture rests upon, you know, the lack thereof of education and persons having confidence in themselves, and whereby the ones at the top who are benefiting as a result of that type of attitude and behavior is they are profiting from it, they are gaining from it, mm-hmm. and then they would like it to stay that way.
Yeah.
Because if we all, you know, we can't all be equal, but at least, you know, there can be some measure of, you know, equality in knowledge, in wealth, in so many ways. And then some people do not want others to get close to them in terms of knowledge, and, you know, because it's going to...
Yeah, because knowledge is power. And then you can actually challenge what somebody is saying, and then that doesn't go very well for some people.
It doesn't go very well for them, and they want to keep you that way so that you have to come to them begging and say, please, please, please. And I don't think that in itself is a good thing in the creation of the country that we would like to see us living in.
Caller, well, I thank you for calling, definitely. I'm glad that hopefully you will call a lot more and make your own point of view known, because I think it's a very relevant point.
I think in adding to that is that, you know, if we can be creative enough in talking about creativity,
right,
and that we can bring those persons who can make the difference, bring them together, and then let's have more discussions together, and, you know, not just talking at us, but talking with us and listening to us.
Thank you very much, caller.
Thank you.
And all the best. Let's take another call. Good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchroom. What's on your plate today?
All right, good afternoon, Talik. How are you?
Not bad, thank you. How are you?
Not bad. Okay. I want to pick up on what Jomo said. Let's look at this. Don't you believe that there is a reason why politicians generally place more emphasis on going outside to get investors than remaining inside? don't you believe that there's a reason why they do that?
Caller, that sounds like a loaded question. I can give a number of points to that. I do agree with you that we have this belief, again, you know, the typical model that the investment must come from the outside. And there is some truth to that to an extent, right? But I do also know that sometimes it's to the benefit of certain individuals who want to manipulate the system. So it's sometimes it's...
I agree, but at the same time, the nationals are able to get a little something where they could, you know, keep their head above water, right?
Yeah.
And I think at the end of the day, the politicians and the general populace are kind of happy with that. We're not totally, but we're kind of happy with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But let's look at what Jomo was saying about land. Do not release your land. Do not sell your land and that sort of thing. Let me tell Jomo, ideally, that is what we'd like. Ideally, but the reality of it today, 2019, that cannot happen. That cannot happen. Let's look at what's happening here on the ground there. You know, among the people right there in St. Lucia, nationals, who have a lot of land to burn, and it's just lying there doing nothing. Let's look at that. Very quickly.
But caller, we can all.
And you have year after year, school leavers, people leaving school, cannot get work. Now let's look at it again. What do you prefer? You prefer that land lying there in relation to vis-a-vis young people or just people generally cannot get work, crime building up. Which one? Choose your choice. Which one you want?
I hear you, caller. But
somebody, hold on.
Yeah, go ahead.
Somebody's going to take up that land that is lying there, acres that is lying there. The nationals don't have the means, they don't have the finance, they don't have the capability in which to develop that land and make it work to provide employment and what else. Okay? So what are we going to do? Are we going to stay there, watch that land in where the SH or whatever have there? Watch it for years. I grew up, my parents grew up, seen that land there, cows, horses, all kind of thing on it. What was it bringing back in relation to the development, the progress of the country? Okay, let's look at that.
I hear you, caller, but can I step in a little bit?
Yes, step in.
Because we also have a very long history in St. Lucia of foreign ownership of property here. Foreign elements of property, large estates, extensive, thousands of acres of land purchased by a foreign family or foreign company.
Very good.
And
very
the land good. pretty much stays there. You've had also, and it doesn't get used.
I agree.
Right. No, we also have a history of properties which have been, we've been told about oil refineries, caller. We've been told about massive resort properties. We've been made a lot of promises in that same way. So I understand what you're saying in terms of yes, you have to have some risk. But then the question is, should not the developer be coming in with capital to make that investment? In the case of DSH,
I agree. Yes, I'm with you there. They have to come in. I agree that ideally that's what we want. They have to come in. But it just shows you the kind of world that we're dealing with, the kind of investors, the kind of money goals that we're dealing with out there. In that you have to come with all sorts of different ways in which to get those people to come in. You know. Now as to what you're willing to give them, you know, is up to again the leadership, right?
But shouldn't it be measured, caller? Shouldn't you know that, okay, if somebody is coming in with an idea, that in fact that idea has a reasonable chance of actually working?
And so that's
the point.
I agree with you there. As to what is happening there with DSH, totally I agree with the people. That is out of order. That is out of order. That there's a lot of things wrong about that. That stinks about it. It's out of order. It's not the proper way of doing things. I agree with the people. That was totally wrong the way that is going on there. You know, and God forbid if this, for the country's sake, I wish it could be successful for the country's sake. Right? Because I hate to, at the other side, I hate to see that land lying there for years. Sometimes I little picnic boy growing up and it's just there like that. Nothing is happening and people are unemployed. Crime growing up, nothing is happening. I'm sick and tired of seeing that. I'm sick and tired of that. So I don't care who he is, where the person comes from, as long as you could come in and help the situation, help young people get work to be productive, that is what I want to see. That is what I want to see. I'm sick and tired of seeing politicians, government after government, party after party coming in, and these things continue to prevail in the country. So that thing about land, not dropping land, and that's if the people are there, they have all the acres there. You know, those people can't even go to VH Hospital and pay for the medicals. They cannot, and they have acres of land. Eh? That making sense?
Well, you're bringing up a whole other issue about healthcare, and access.
But this is the sort of thing that we have to look at. So it's not a matter of just listening to people and coming down and saying, you're giving land and that sort of thing. At the end of the day, choose your choice. Which one you want? You want unemployment? Or you want some jobs to come in where people at least could keep their heads above water?
Okay, caller, let's give somebody else a chance to speak.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchroom. What's on your plate?
Yeah, good afternoon. Interesting discussion.
I hope you're adding to it. Yep.
Yeah, the gentleman is trying to advance a case about land lying there.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean to say because the land is lying there, you could just take it and give it away and don't put it into economic use. You know, you can't just, not because the thing is just lying there, you give it away and sometimes...
Well, not even just that. In the case of that specific land, there was actually a major investment being made in the meat processing facility with the plans for expanding the livestock. You know, it was a whole thrust, in my understanding, in terms of food security for your country.
Yeah, that's for your country, but you can't take it and just give it away. And then, as it has been said, it's not whatever investment that is there now is not bringing anything to us, the people. You know, this is another thing you had away. I give away so much, but what is it in it? What is in it for us?
Right.
You know, you can't just, not because things are lying there, you will just take it, give it away, and then there is very little that people benefit from, you know.
Right.
That is why, you know, the gentleman who called earlier about land use, you know, we have to look at all these things holistically.
Mm-hmm.
Not because you have prime land lying there, somebody just want to come and try, say, okay, he's doing something, we just go and we take it.
I mean, a very good case in point.
Spending money up front sometimes, which we don't even have.
A very good case in point, caller, is the concern about beaches. You know, having all our beaches taken up by hotels. A lot of St. Lucians simply want to have a place to go to recreate.
Not because we have the beaches. Somebody see a prime piece of beach, you just give it away.
Yeah.
And what is there for your locals to recreate?
Yeah. Thanks very much, caller. Let's try to take in a few more calls. Good afternoon and welcome to the lunchroom. What's on your plate?
Yes, good afternoon, sir. Interesting conversation this afternoon. The caller before the last one, his comments. I want to go back to his comments a bit, and I want to ask him something. Where did the money come from for the investor or the so-called investor to make use of that land in Beaufort?
Well, at least in terms of the land itself, had he bought it outright, he would have had to put in about $18 million.
Okay, this is jumping. You said had he?
Well, yes, because he's gotten it essentially for next to nothing, for a dollar an acre.
No, well, let's be careful, eh?
Mm-hmm.
The government of the day has not said anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been told that he's leasing the property. You're aware of that, at a dollar an acre.
But did the government ever agree that that was the amount that he was being charged? You see, I understand everybody wants to jump in and say the possibility of employment, the possibility of employment. But I want us to start at the very beginning. the money that is being spent or has been spent in Vifor, what is the source of those funds? If it is the investor, then the risks and the rewards should belong to him. However, if it is not the investor, if those monies are monies, whether it be now, he according to the Prime Minister, he will spend money initially and get it back at the end, it's still our money. And let's say it's not even, because, I mean, our Prime Minister has had quite a history of saying things which are not necessarily true. Let us say for a moment that that money is actually CIP monies, monies from the sale of St. Lucian passports. I want to ask everyone listening out there, was this the best thing to be done with that money at this present time? Was this the best way to spend that money? I think people need to understand that and realize it's not $5 million or $10 million that was spent there.
Well, based on what we've been told, about $81 million EC has been spent so far on that project.
And again, I want to ask, I need someone from the government of Senusha to come out and say, hey, listen, this $81 million that has been spent, it has come from this investor.
Well, that's what we've been told, that no CIP money has gone into the project as yet.
No, sir. They have not said where the money is coming from, you know. They've said no CIP money, right?
Right.
But have they said that the investor is the one who spent all the money?
I believe they have said so. I believe they have said that the investor is the one who is putting forward the money for this project. But I, like I said, we've only been told that it's $30 million US, $81 million EC dollars. We're not sure as to whether, in fact, that is what has been spent on the ground. Maybe you might have to get a quantity surveyor to have a look at the project, because it doesn't quite, in my opinion, look at like that amount of money. But it would be good to actually have that input at some point. But from what they're saying so far, no CIP monies have been spent on it. We're not too sure as to where the investor himself has gotten the money, whether he's had to loan it, whether he's gotten it from some other third party. We're not sure. But as far as we know, the investor is the one who has put forward the money.
Okay, so one more thing. So it appears that one of the things that the UWP campaigned on, transparency, seems it's seriously lacking in this project then.
Well, yes, because we've actually asked a number of questions regarding the framework agreements. We're still not sure exactly what the agreement is. We've heard so many different changes to it. Every day is a different kind of story about the agreement. So we're really not sure what the exact agreement is between the government and the investor, DSH.
Yeah, but it appears that the government actually enjoys this. They enjoy that there are so many questions out there and no one knows exactly what is happening. They're thriving on that. They and their people are thriving on misinformation.
It's called controlling the narrative, caller. But have a good one. We just want to take one last call before we can end. Good afternoon and welcome to the lunchroom. What's on your plate today?
Mr. Judge.
Yes, sir.
You keep on saying, as far as we know, that $81 million or $15 million was spent.
As far as we have been told, my apologies.
Exactly. That is what you have to say. As far as we are told, that Joachim spent $15 million US dollars on. The question is, if Joachim had all that funds, all these funds available to him, and if due diligence was done, shouldn't we have known that this man had all that kind of money in, and rather than leasing the land at a dollar, he would have taken more, rather than we, the government, paying for the infrastructure, would have having to paid for the infrastructure, the road, and all these things? Why a man have spent $15 million and yet still the government itself have to spend so much?
Well, by right, Invest in Lucia should have gotten a full breakdown of every single component, because you just heard this big figure, $2.7 billion US dollars. But you really needed to have a full breakdown of how much was going to be spent on infrastructure, how much is going to be spent on the racetrack, how much is going to be spent on the grandstand. Or every single thing should have been itemized and costed so that you would know.
Address yesterday. You heard him talking CIP?
Yes, Vice President, Mr. Eden Harrington of DSH.
Why didn't CIP is not involved in the project?
Well, I don't know that anybody has said that CIP is not involved. I think what has been said is that it is not yet a CIP project. But from all intents...
So what about... Remember we are told that some passports had disappeared. Where are these passports? Where are these passports? What became of these passports?
I don't know about that, caller.
The passports that disappeared, are they the ones that have been stolen? These questions need to be asked and answers need to be answered. Because I cannot understand a man having so much money and yet still we have to put in so much. 15 million? Wow.
Well, 81 million EC dollars. That's what we've been told as the amount thus far spent on the DSH racetrack.
Wow. Okay, Mr. George.
Okay, thank you very much, caller. And that's all the time we have. Unfortunately, we didn't even get a chance to do the weather. I suppose it's going to be coming up right after this. So thanks very much for calling in today. Very spirited discussion indeed. And we'll be back tomorrow. My guest tomorrow is going to be Mr. Kenson Casimir. And next week, Monday, it'll be Dr. James Fletcher. And we'll be speaking about renewables and energy policy in St. Lucia. So please do have yourself a wonderful Thursday. I'm your host, Calix George Jr., saying goodbye.